Radio. We're Radio Verulam in West Harts.
Welcome to the Parent Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM.
Neave Solicitors are proud to sponsor the Parent Show. The friendly team at Neave's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit neavesolicitors.co.uk. Neave Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
Welcome to the Parent Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. I'm Lydia Elcury.
And I'm Cathy Weston.
So tonight's show is all about environment and how we create positive environments for your children's learning. And the person we are speaking to about that is a woman called Elizabeth Jarman, and she's created lots of literature and goes into schools and actually teaches about how to create positive environments for children.
That's right. Elizabeth is a leading early years professional, so she specialises in creating really effective learning environments, and she's the founder and managing director of the Elizabeth Jarman Group. So she's got tons of experience working both with practitioners, with architects, and also she has a passion for helping parents engage with their children's learning. So it's really exciting for us to, it's sort of an interesting topic, isn't it? Something that parents maybe wouldn't normally, they might walk into a nursery and think, oh, this is nice, yeah, not quite sure why
it works and what it is about, yeah. It and even, like, I think the thing that I'd love to speak to Elizabeth about is how to get your home conducive. I mean, obviously without spending a fortune, but how just to get the things right so that it is a positive environment for your kids to learn.
I think it's something everyone has thought about at some point, but not quite sure, you know, that you'd love to know the theory behind it and what we could do to create more effective environments.
Absolutely. And later on the show, we're going to be talking to Posy Parsons, who's the chair of the Saint, so from Fleetville PTA. And as anybody who doesn't know, the Fleetville Christmas Fair is on Saturday afternoon, so she'll be telling us all about what's going on there to try and make sure we all get down there and support Fleetville Infant and Junior School.
So I just wanted to say as well, Lydia, that if anyone has any questions for Elizabeth, they can always email us on the show. The address is parentshow@radioverulam.com, or you can ring us. We've got a lovely studio assistant out there, Daniel. Keep him busy. Ring the show and he'll write down your questions and we'll submit them to Elizabeth, who'll be coming up in a few minutes.
That'll wake him up. And late at the end of the show, in association with Raring to Go, we'll be talking to Claire Healy, who, I think Claire said this week, she's going to talk to us about places to go in London, things to do in London in the lead up to Christmas.
That's right. She's done Santa and where he was. Now she's moved on to the big city.
Great stuff. And since it is now officially December, we feel we're absolutely vindicated in playing loads of Christmassy tunes for you. So here's San Etienne with I Was Born on Christmas Day. Thanks for joining us again on the Parent Show this evening. And as I said in the intro, we're talking tonight about spaces and how to make them conducive to your child's learning and well-being. And we're talking to Elizabeth Jarman from Elizabeth Jarman Training about that this evening. Hello, Elizabeth, are you there?
I am here, yes. Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us this evening.
My pleasure. I'm delighted to be here.
So tell us a little bit about the relationship between learning and environment, and what do you mean exactly by environment?
Okay. Well, I've always suspected that the environment had a huge impact on all of us. And I don't just mean children. I mean us as adults as well by that. And when I'm thinking about the environment, I'm thinking about a combination and a blend of different aspects. So I'm thinking about the physical space that perhaps we live in, we might work in, we might go to school and spend time in, maybe a play group where we might attend, maybe a park space, or even maybe the supermarket space. So all the physical spaces around us that influence us. I'm also thinking about the kinds of experiences, and particularly with children, the kind of resources that they're experimenting with within the environment. And very importantly, the other adults or people within the environment having a blended influence. And so that's what I was really focusing in on through the research I did, which resulted in developing the communication-friendly spaces approach, which is a way of rethinking the way that our environment can particularly support children's speaking and listening skills, their emotional well-being and their physical development. And in terms, particularly when I first looked at this area 7 years ago, I was really keen to think about the way the environment could affect speaking and listening skills positively, because that was such a national agenda for the government and for schools and for us as parents, helping our children to develop as really confident communicators, because we know that children who have very good communication skills are the children who are going to progress and become good readers and then learn to write well as they move on through school.
So, Elizabeth, how can we make that connection? Everybody wants their children to, you know, to be good communicators. Just in let's start with the home environment. You've got a blank canvas, say, as a parent. You've moved into a new house, so you've got a spare room or you've got a corner of a living room that you can do something with, and you've got young children. What would you recommend? What are the things that we should be doing?
Okay, I think one of the really important things is that we start to build on our knowledge and things that we notice about our children as individuals, because they're all unique. And I think that it's really important that we take account of the child's perspective within any kind of environment. And often we do a lot of work helping people to really tune in to what the children are seeing, hearing, feeling, maybe smelling from their point of view. And that's really important we think about that, so that we can create what I call developmentally appropriate spaces that children can really access and feel confident and comfortable in. Now, I think it's very important when we're thinking about our individual children that we take account of the fact that they all have different kinds of preferences in terms of the spaces where they are going to feel most confident and most drawn to, in the same way that we as adults have different preferences about the kinds of spaces where we like spending time. And so, therefore, we need to be blending that knowledge that we've got as parents and really using that to inform what we can do. So some of you will already know that your children, for instance, are really preferring the outside space. They're always going to be most creative, most engaged, and most switched on within an outside environment. Some of you will have children who prefer small, enclosed-type spaces and will seek those out. Some of you will have children who hate those kinds of spaces and are much happier in an uncluttered, floor-defined space. And so it's about us really noticing that in our children and then using those observations and those things to really inform what we do.
So how, I suppose the thing that's going on in my head right now as a parent is I'm thinking, how do I know what I know? I mean, how do I know what my child likes, and how do I know how to adapt different situations to find out what my child likes? So what do you suggest? Like, get all the cushions off the sofa, throw them on the ground, see if your kid likes that?
No, what I would say is I think it's really important sometimes to step back and to watch and almost to take a kind of helicopter view of your home space, inside and out, if you've got a garden as well, and really notice how your children interact with that space and where are the places where they're really spending time. So are they seeking out perhaps the little space around the back of the sofa? Are they wanting to build spaces themselves? Outside, are they spending time maybe around the natural landmarks within your garden? Because I would predict that they would do. It would be the bushes or it would be the tree or a little step which will draw them, those natural landmarks, which is where communication and play will be taking place.
So, Elizabeth, we've been nodding here when you said the back of the sofa. They all seem obsessed with the back of the sofa. Now, here's an example. They want to build a den, often, at the back of the sofa. And, OK, it messes up the living room and it doesn't look good. But what can, just take that example, what can we do to facilitate that? And once the den is established, they will often have their own rules of entry and things they want to bring into it. How can we play with them? How can we engage with them in that space?
Or do we need to?
I think that's a really good question to reflect on. It depends on the age of the children. You know, sometimes with younger children, perhaps who don't have the skills to create a space around the back of the sofa, you may actually do just that. You may move it forward slightly. You may use some kind of drape. at the back of the sofa, maybe onto a radiator or another piece of furniture, and create that little enclosed type space. And actually, what we've got to think about is why are the children drawn to a space like that in the first place? And it might be because there's no flow of movement and visual distraction when they're tucked away in a space like that. And sometimes children are actually in a space like that because it's reducing the noise in the environment for them, so they can really focus and engage. So it might be that you set a space like that up, or if they're slightly older and they've got the skills to create either with you or independently, you may well make available those kinds of resources for them to actually develop their own ideas. And you're absolutely right. Children sometimes really get so much pleasure and develop so much language out of the physical act of creating spaces, just as much so as actually using them. And they do develop a whole set of rules about the space. Sometimes they get quite territorial about the space, and they really don't want you as the adult coming in. It's their private area. And I think sometimes we've got to respect that. I think sometimes it's a challenge for us, but sometimes I think all of us need the opportunity for space and time to be on our own, maybe to reflect, maybe to refresh, and just to have that space and time to be. And I think particularly when we look at some of the pressures on children during a busy day, and often an expectation that they're going to be part of a big social group all day long, maybe at school, they sometimes need that place to withdraw to. So I think we've got to be sensitive observers and know when to give them that space and time to perhaps go through some of the things in their heads or play out some of the things that have happened to them during the day, and also when the time is right for us to be alongside, maybe sitting outside, or maybe joining them and being involved in the play that perhaps they're wanting to share with us within a space like that.
Elizabeth, I'm just looking at this a poster that you very kindly sent out to us. It's called The Communication Friendly Spaces Approach by You. And I see within that there's like a little tent, and there's a mom sitting in a tent with her two children. Is that another good space that you're saying? Some place,
I think yes. I mean, for some children, using something like a pop-up structure can be really useful. And that's for a variety of reasons. It's about breaking the space down. And sometimes for some children, that helps them feel as if they've got more control of the play going on around them. Sometimes it can also be very useful because you can use the sides or the back of the structure to act almost as visual screening, to block out lots of the movement that's perhaps taking place in the garden or in the rest of the house. And removing that visual distraction can sometimes be very helpful for children to really allow them to settle and to linger in a space. And so sometimes a space like that can work really, really well. Absolutely.
Is reading a particularly important area to get the space right? Or should you be looking to get space right all the time? For example, for older children, homework, or younger children just reading when parents are reading to them, what should we be looking out for?
I mean, I really think that what we're doing when we're thinking about the communication friendly spaces approach is we're blending together lots of different elements of research, which I can share a bit more about in terms of the physical space, which really help us to set the scene for learning and development to take place, whatever that might be, whether that's reading, whether that's imaginative role play, whether that's focusing on some kind of written homework from school. So it's about how the physical conditions, how that can really help children to engage. And that's what the work is really about. It's about helping us to rethink, and sometimes I think as well to challenge some of the historical stereotypes that have existed for a long time about how environments for young children are expected to look.
Elizabeth, can I share a couple of mistakes, say in inverted commas, that I've made, I suppose, in this regard?
Sure.
When I was doing my son's bedroom, I bought a tent and I hung it from the ceiling, and I thought this would make a lovely reading tent for him. you know, and without consulting him or asking him or even sort of thinking really about where he likes to read. It's never been used. And it was so disappointing. It looked terribly nice, you know, in the room. But I think you've made, and another thing is that a friend of mine was telling me that she and I had done the same, had created a sort of a space in the garden under a tree with lanterns and cloth. And but they never went near that either.
No.
You know, and the mistake, I think, as parents might be to think, oh, they don't actually like that. But the problem is we didn't consult, we didn't listen, we didn't. Well, actually, they love digging holes in the garden and hiding behind the bush. So absolutely. I think it's an imposition of things, which is really not listening to your child, isn't it?
I think that's absolutely right. You know, we've got to question, who is it for, actually?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it's not really what we're not looking at here. If we're really wanting to create responsive environments that are supporting our children, then it's not about a quick visual makeover in that corner over there so it blends in with our beautiful interior design. It's absolutely so much more than that, based on that observation of children and knowledge of really setting the scene for them. So it's bespoke, and it's about recognising the uniqueness of our children and also blending together that with the uniqueness of our family and the uniqueness of our culture and the uniqueness of our physical home space, for instance. And I think that's the important thing that we watch, that if the children are able to articulate and explain, that we consult with them. I think that's really important. And there's all kinds of interesting ways that you can do that. I mean, we've been involved in some interesting projects where with slightly older children, 5-6-year-olds, we've given them disposable cameras, and they've taken photographs of the spaces that they really like and the spaces that they don't like, not only at home and in the garden, but in the park as well. And that was really good fun, actually, because that was quite enlightening and was a great talking point too, you know. So that was interesting in informing that and building up that knowledge. I think the other key thing as well is not to be frightened of talking to the school about, you know, the kinds of environments where your children are secure and perhaps communicating really confidently. Because within certainly the revised early years foundation stage, which was published in September this year, there is a renewed focus on the role of the home environment in supporting children's learning and opening up much more creative dialogue between the home and all that lovely knowledge that you've got as parents with the school to inform the provision of environments there as well. And I think that's a really important point for us to raise.
And, you know, now that you've been saying this, Elizabeth, like, I've just realised that there have been environments created in the nursery. My son goes to the playgroup he used to go to, and I just thought, oh, that's a really cute little corner for this, but I didn't realise there was actually a whole
theory
and a strategy behind it. Can I ask you, I mean, you mentioned two-year-olds specifically on your website. Why two-year-olds? And you don't mention any other age group specifically.
The reference specifically at the moment to two-year-olds is because there is a huge expansion taking place, which is government-funded, of funding provision for two-year-olds, and that's based on a response from the Allen Review, which looked at early intervention strategies, okay, and it was looking at really trying to offer more provision for two-year-olds in appropriate learning environments. And so that's a government agenda at the moment, and something that is going to require a big review, actually, of learning environments to make sure that we are then offering those children environments that are really homely and environments that really are appropriate for very, very young children. And so we're very keen to work in partnership with settings and local authorities, which is what we are doing, to really use communication-friendly spaces as a way to inform those kinds of environments so that they really develop and are very supportive and nurturing, and not just a watered-down version of what might be appropriate for a four-year-old.
And obviously, Elizabeth, you know, all of us have been into nurseries and other and primary schools and had a look around and made our own sort of judgments about what sort of an environment it is. And if it...
Sure.
It's very difficult, isn't it? Because parents are sort of... They don't know how to sort of judge the setting. I mean, can you give us any tips on what you think makes a nice a nursery environment that's optimal to our children's well-being?
Absolutely. I mean, certainly in terms of the work that I've done, in terms of looking at the physical space, there are five main themes that emerged. One was about how the setting is maximising the use of space, okay, and offering a variety of different kinds of learning contexts. So offering those opportunities outside, okay, for those children who we know really prefer to be there, and that's certainly in terms of best practice something that the settings are being encouraged to do, to really offer those opportunities for communication outside just as much as inside, so that they're beginning to think about different types of spaces, spaces that are for one, spaces that recognise the stage of development of the children, because we all recognise when our children are very young, for instance, they're at that what we call a solitary play stage. That's the kind of fancy name for it, you know, where actually they want all the resources for them and they're really not ready to share because developmentally they haven't got the skills to do that yet. That's not the, where they're operating at. And yet a lot of our environments for our youngest children are set up on the basis that they will be part of a big social group all day long. And I think that's really challenging for children. So does the environment, when you go and look at it, reflect where the children are at developmentally? And so there are those opportunities at times when they choose to have that space and time on their own. When children move on a bit and they're at that what we call a parallel play stage, where I can be next to you with my stuff, but I'm still not ready for that complex sharing stuff, does the environment accommodate that and reflect that? So is the environment really in tune with the children using the space or not? The other key things, I mean, I think lots and lots of movement in environments can be really distracting for children. So how is the setting defining spaces, using screening, protecting spaces, allowing children to really settle and engage deeply? One of my points that I feel really, really strongly about is I feel very strongly that there is a lack of softness and homeliness within our environments for children, especially children spending very long days in settings. They're very, very hard environments. And so much research from Harvard University in the States makes very clear connections between softness in environments supporting children's emotional independence.
Do you, when you say softness, do you mean like physical, like colours, light, or
I'm thinking
upholstery?
About the introduction of, you know, things like sofas, things like, you know,
beanbags,
cushions, places to snuggle, places that are really comfortable to settle. Mm. And so I really challenge teachers and practitioners to go and check out how comfortable the environment is. Is it encouraging children to linger, to really settle, or not? Because an awful lot of them are almost clinical in style. And so I think softness is a really important thing to think about. I think the other interesting thing that we all have observed in children at home, sometimes children have this need for containment within the environment. You know, we've all seen children getting in the box or getting in the laundry basket. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes you can really factor that into the environment as well. And all we're doing really is providing different kinds of context that children can seek out, where they will take their play and learning. And we're really thinking about setting the scene for that to happen.
Okay.
I think one of the other things as well, you know, some children, because of the kind of things they like playing with best, really like floor spaces where they can really stretch out. And if they're into construction or train tracks, you know, does the environment offer spaces like that? Or is it really restricting our perception of where learning takes place just to a table and chairs? Just to tables and chairs. And I think that's, again, where we begin to challenge some of those historical stereotypes. And we've got to really look at how our environments are really supporting what we know now, today, based on research, about how effective teaching and learning takes place.
Elizabeth, what about any differences between boys and girls when thinking about those kinds of spaces? Are there any particular needs that we should be aware of, or anything in particular that comes out of the research?
I've done a book called A Place to Talk for Boys, in a series that I think there are nine titles in that at the moment, which looks specifically at some of the research into the way that boys develop, the way that boys learn. And we have done lots of action research projects trying to understand more about boys' preferred context for learning.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really in response to government reports about trying to narrow the gap, actually, because boys aren't achieving as well. And I think that there's lots of ways of looking at this. You know, I mean, boys tend to learn in a much more physical kind of way. They tend to be more kind of what we call kinesthetic learners. There's research that is a very interesting book, actually, by Neil Farmer, published by A.C. Black. It came out in February this year, and it's called Getting It Right for Boys Within Early Year Settings, and that's really worth having a look at because that pulls together some of the latest research studies. And it looks at things like the way that there are reportedly differences in terms of the way that boys develop their language skills later than girls do. And when I think about the offer in an awful lot of our early year settings, I do feel it's quite a feminised offer, in inverted commas, and doesn't always take account of or embrace the potential of kinesthetic learning and lots of opportunities for outside provision if that's what the boys are choosing. Now, I don't want to stereotype, okay, and I think what we need to do is really focus on individual children. I think that's important. And that we don't just get swept away and then start reinforcing certain kinds of behaviours, that we look at the individual and what their particular needs are within that environment. And that's the really important thing.
Elizabeth, I'm just looking at your website now, and sure. I'm looking at these communication-friendly spaces bags. Tell us a bit about them.
OK, well, we've actually now got an Elizabeth Jarlin for Families Facebook page, OK? And there's some more information on there about our family bags. But the bags have been used very successfully. We've worked with over 28,000 families so far, and they've been externally evaluated. They're basically duffel bags, which are which contain different kinds of materials that are very carefully selected, which families can use together with their children to create different kinds of spaces, some enclosed, some floor-defined, some soft, some semi-private. And the actual act of creating the spaces generates lots and lots of talk. Sometimes the bags have been loaned to families for a weekend from the school or a setting. And it's really led to lovely conversations with the school on the Monday morning about what they did with the bag at the weekend. And it's really just opened up much more sharing between the kinds of knowledge that you've got as parents of your children and the kind of spaces where they like to spend time that work well for them, and actually how that perhaps the school could recreate some situations like that to really support the children's learning in that environment.
I mean, I think a big lesson from what we've been talking about tonight is to just be able to step back as parents and just pay attention to what they actually like doing. It's so easy to get caught up in just the routine. You're making the tea and they're off building a den, but what are they actually doing and enjoying that we're not really noticing?
And I think then as well, what kinds of things or resources can we make available to children to really enhance and develop those kinds of opportunities? You know, and I use the word resource as opposed to toy, okay? Because I'm thinking of things that can actually be much more open-ended and really trigger imagination, and used in a variety of different kinds of ways time and time again. So it's a bit like taking us back to old-fashioned kind of play, perhaps that we had the experience of when we were younger.
Yeah, when nobody was actually trying as hard as, you know, parents are nowadays. Elizabeth, sorry, I know we're running out of time and we've kept you on for quite a bit. What about colours? Tell us what your thoughts
are. Some of the other factors to consider. There's lots and lots of research into the way that colour affects children's psychological temperature and mood. And I often feel when I go and visit different settings that, and actually it can be the same in homes too, because of the kinds of resources that we're bombarded with from catalogues or shops, that it's all about bold, bright primary all the time. It's all about being full on. It's about entertainment because they're little. And you know what? There's so much research that shows us that certain colours actually are very relaxing. And pale blue, for instance, is a very relaxing colour. Greens are also very relaxing. Pale blue is a very cool colour. But equally, there are certain colours when we're surrounded by them a lot that can put our blood pressure up. So red is one of those colours, okay? And I think that sometimes what we've ended up with are environments for children with what I call a random use of colour, with no attention being paid to what we're trying to achieve here. Mm-hmm. If we're trying to offer a relaxed space for children to really settle and engage, let's think about the kind of colours that we're using within that space. If you're thinking about a nice sleep space for your children, think about the colours that you're using and how actually we don't want them to be hyped up at that point. We don't want lots of visual overstimulation.
Elizabeth, think of all the bedrooms all over the country where people have, first of all, they have televisions in their bedrooms, red on the walls. This would be the sort of the opposite of the optimal environment, you know, bright red walls, you know.
I mean, I'm not saying no colour. I'm not saying let's all have death by beige, but we need to use colour in a more targeted and informed way. I've written a colour paper. We do lots of occasional papers because we have a foundation, and there are lots of occasional papers on our foundation site. There's one specifically about colour that people might be interested in having a look at, which will give you a lot more depth and awareness.
And Elizabeth, you have actually sent us lots of your lovely booklets with different titles. Lydia, do you want to read out a couple of those?
Yeah, we've got It's A Place to Talk. You mentioned this series already, Elizabeth. So we've got A Place to Talk at Home, A Place to Talk at My Childminders, A Place to Talk in Extended Schools, A Place to Talk Outside, and A Place to Talk for Boys. So you've very kindly agreed to let us give those away. So if we'll be having a question to win those books in just a little bit. But tell us a little bit about the series, just briefly, before we let you go.
The series, there are currently 9 titles in the series, and I've just written 2 new books for the series, which are going to be published early in 2013. The new titles are A Place to Talk for 2-year-olds, because that's such a current topic, but also A Place to Talk for Babies. And all of the books have the same format. They are highly visual. They contain enough of the theory, it's accessible, but it shows you what the ideas can look like in practice. And so there are 12 ideas to try in each book, and it shows pictures of a space. It explains the rationale, the why we created it, what we were hoping to achieve, and then some observations about how the children use the space. And there are some points for you to reflect on in terms of your environment. So I think that that's a useful thing to look at. There's more information on the website about that. So I think people might find some of those really helpful in just giving a bit more information about the approach.
Great stuff. And it's www.elizabethjarmantraining.co.uk. It'll be on our website. It's on our Facebook page already, but we'll...
And also that we've just launched an Elizabeth Jarman for Families blog that's also on the website, which is worth having a look at too. We've actually... had one of our training team, Emma, introduce lots of CFS, Communication Friendly Spaces ideas, with her family, with her 3 children, and she's been reporting back, and so her blog is going to be on there each week, so that's worth looking at. And I would also suggest that people have a look at the magazine that we produce. There is a family focus in our bi-monthly magazine in January, and I think that might be full of some useful tips and ideas and case studies as well for people.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. Thanks for all your tips and information this evening.
I hope it's been useful.
Thanks very much, Elizabeth.
All the best.
Bye-bye.
Neave Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neave's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit neavesolicitors.co.uk. Neave Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
Do you think you'll be sick of that song in 2 weeks' time?
It's not as bad as Fairy Tale of New York, Lydia.
Oh, I forgot to play that one.
Next week.
I'll save that joy for next week, indeed. Now, we've got Claire Healy from Raring to Go in the studio with us.
Hello.
How are you doing, Claire?
Very well, thank you.
We're going to pick your brains in just a second, and I'm very delighted to say we've got Posy Parsons, who is the chair of the Fleetfield PTA, on the phone as well. How are you doing, Posy?
Very well. Thanks so much for inviting me on.
Well, it's our pleasure. We want to talk to you about Fleetfield Christmas Fair in just a second. But ladies, as all fellow parents, what did you think about what Elizabeth Jarman was saying about environmental spaces?
And we know that you guys have got children of different ages, Claire. You've got
Mine are older, teenagers now. But if that kind of advice had been around, I think at the time when they were growing up, I can see it now. I can look back and on what they were doing and where they were, and I think what she's saying makes so much sense, doesn't it? You know, we all want to be somewhere comfortable, and then we absorb information or whatever it is
environment. Really eye-opening for me, because I think I had always assumed that I had it all sorted out for them, that, you know, I put everything within their reach, and I was thinking of it from their perspective in, like, a height way.
Yeah.
But But I definitely will look at their environment differently now with, I don't know, a whole range of things, really, from the colors, because I have to redo my son's bedroom. And I have a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old, so it's quite pertinent to me, I think.
Yeah.
But just also, I think, asking my 5-year-old, you know, why does she like this space? And I think I will give her the idea of going around with a camera and just talking about it.
Yeah, that's a great
it.
One. Yeah.
I think that would be... yeah, just a great way to see how she approaches it. Because like Lydia was asking, I think it's difficult to know, you know, what your child needs from the space at that time. And so I think I'll definitely observe them differently.
And especially for me as a kind of control freak mom, like even what you've said is making everything accessible to your children. Like that hadn't dawned on me.
Everything's
puzzles are up high because otherwise the pieces are going to get lost. And you know, that's my thinking is on a very functional way, and like my son is permanently behind the armchair and has created a den for himself there, and it had never dawned on me, absolutely never, that I should nurture that and encourage it. Of course it's great for him to have his own little space, you know.
And you've mentioned the word control. I think it's to be a good parent, I suppose, in this regard, we've got to have areas where they're allowed to be and to enjoy all the materials and, you know, have the playroom or space outside or something, because it is so easy, isn't it? As Elizabeth said, you either go down the, you know, what makes nice interior design or really what is good for them, what is good for their learning.
It's interesting though, isn't it? Because you spend a lot of time creating a room, as you say, beautifully decorated with everything in its place and these shelves and that shelf, and actually they don't really want, they want a bit of a sheet
space.
Over a chair.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They're telling us, and they have been doing for years,
yeah.
But of course we haven't understood until now how to read those sort of signs.
That's it. And these series of booklets, A Place to Talk, I'd really highly recommend listeners send us an email. The question's really easy. We just told you what Elizabeth Jarman's website address is. So drop us one if you'd like to win one of these. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of these different ones. And they're great and they're good and visual. I mean, I'm just flicking through them and saying, okay, I get it. It makes sense, you know. And they're here. They're for free. Send us an email on parentshow@radioverulam.com to win yourself a copy of them. Promised us.
I promised I would talk about London Days Out this time,
right,
the ice rinks,
right.
And all the activities that are going on down in London. There is loads.
Yeah.
Loads and loads.
Tell us.
But one thing that I just wanted to mention very quickly before, it sort of ties in with this anyway. We've mentioned, and I think Margie Skinner came on before, didn't she, to talk about her Step Outside guides.
Yes.
She's done a Christmas one.
Oh,
it's
great.
Fabulous. I saw it today. And it's based around all the Christmas decorations by the trees.
Wow.
It's absolutely fantastic. It's got stickers in it and it's exactly the same as the others. It's £5 and you get a whole day out of treasure hunting in London. It's absolutely brilliant. So if you're stuck over the holidays, it's a really, really good one to
do.
And her website, I think, is stepoutsideguides.co.uk.
You know, you can get them on Amazon now.
They're fantastic.
Yes, they are really, really good. I saw it today and I just was so impressed with it.
Ah, yes, Christmas in London, a family adventure day.
Yeah.
Brilliant. There's four. There's the London Lion Hunt, Down by the Thames and the London Treasure Trail.
Yeah. So it's four in the series and they're planning more.
Brilliant.
Because they've been so popular. So that is a really good day out down in London. Obviously, don't go on Saturday because you'd be at Fleetville Infants.
Yeah. well done, Claire.
Yeah. Thank you, Posey.
But it's £4. What a great Christmas present.
Yeah.
You know.
Absolutely brilliant. Really, really good fun thing to do. But if you've done that and you want to do something else, one thing that I did last weekend, which was fabulous, was just going down to see the Christmas lights on Oxford Street and Regent Street and having a wander up and down there. That was really good. And if you go on to the visitlondon.com visitor's guide, there are loads of other decorations. You can go to Covent Garden, go all over the place. And they've got some really nice, looks really festive down there. Go and have a look at the tree in Trafalgar Square and all sorts. But I did promise you ice rinks, so I will go through all the ice rinks.
Skate onto the ice rinks.
Have you tested them all, Claire?
Every single one of them with my bottom, mainly.
Thank you.
Now, I'm not the best skater, I have to say.
But I did go last year to Winter Wonderland, which was fantastic. They have an ice rink down there and they've got all the activities. So they don't just do any of these places. They're not just ice rinks. So let me give you a little bit of a listing. I'll try not to make it too boring, but the ones that probably are most relevant for us. The Natural History Museum has an ice rink. It's just outside and they've got food and drink and gifts and lights all around it. So it's a really festive, you know, festive environment. And right outside the Natural History Museum, there are these beautiful buildings that we're allowed to skate by, and it's just fantastic.
Lovely.
Somerset House, of course, they always have one. These are all on from now until the 6th of January. That seems to be the general. The Somerset House one, they have a club night as well. For us parents, we could go down and you can relax in Tom's Skate Lounge.
There you go.
That's definitely... For me, Canary Wharf got one this year as well. Obviously, that's quite a classy one, surrounded by shops and bars and restaurants.
Or if it's for kids whose parents work in the city, so they might actually get to see them.
Yes, good idea, yes. But they've got a little extra bit on theirs. You can leave the main rink and you can skate through the trees. They've got like a skate path, really, a bit different, which is quite nice. EDF Energy have got an ice skate, which is near the London Eye. It's a pop-up rink, so I assume it's not an ice rink. I don't know, I might be wrong. But that one's right near the London Eye. So they're all big landmarks.
Yeah.
Hampton Court Palace, they've got one down there. With the backdrop of Hampton Court Palace all lit up. What a beautiful place to go skating. You can skate in the moat of the Tower of London. Actually, in the grassy sort of moaty bit where you picnic in the summer and you can skate in the winter, which is a fabulous place. Westfield have one. An indoor one. I might be wrong, actually. They've got, in their main atrium, they've got one there. And they've also got the Westfield Stratford City ice rink, which I think is the outdoor one. Hyde Park, obviously, we've mentioned before, which is a great one. Broadgate ice rink, which is a little bit further away, EC2. They have an outdoor rink. That's the only one that you don't need to book for. You just turn up and skate. I presume you probably need to take your own skates for that one as well. And Brent Cross have one as well. And they have a Robinson Crusoe Panto, a Ferris wheel, carousel and various other rides and things for their sort of winter wonderland down there. And that's free to get into. So I assume that's part of the sort of shopping experience. So that's basically your sort of ice rinks out as a summary.
Right. And people can get all the info from your Raring to Go magazine.
They can. There is a link on there to all the activities going on in London, to the Visit London website. We've put a link on so that if you want to go into London and you want to find things to do, it's all on
there.
So
I just nodded.
You're just knocking the studio about.
Bashing the place about, sorry.
So
that's brilliant. And while you're in there, you could hit Hamleys.
You could. I went to Hamleys on Friday.
Did you?
Oh my goodness! Take your battering ram. That's what I would say.
Really?
It's really busy.
Even on
really
a weekday.
We went on a Friday evening, and it was really, really busy. But of course, it's fantastic. I mean, the atmosphere is just fantastic in there. It's just like there's always something. You just want to stand and watch these men playing with toys and just having a great time.
Yeah, the temptation is not to bring your kids there because it'll drive them nuts with kind of. But then
excitement.
Again, you know, but the excitement of it is just something else, isn't it?
It is an experience, isn't it? It's not just going, and you have to buy something when you're there, but you know, to go, and it's just like a fun fair almost, isn't it, of activities. It's great.
Awesome. So. Great stuff. Claire, thank you so much for telling us all about the rinks. Thanks so much for joining us this evening. We're coming to the end of our show. Next week, we're going to talk about preserving our high street, what we as parents in St. Albans should do, and what the council are doing to stop all the shops closing down. Thanks for joining us. We'll be here at the same time next week.
Visitors are proud to sponsor the Parent Show. The friendly team at Neves includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit nevesolicitors.co.uk. Neves Solicitors, your complete...